TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those listening live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bright and early, we're coming at you for the next 4 hours here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators will get underway at 2 o'clock. It's Mr. Lube game day here on TSN 1290. We're with you from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. We turn it over to Hustler and Lawless from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. And then Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show gets underway at 1 o'clock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website where the Winnipeg Jets morning papers are currently up and available for your perusal is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, it's been a long, drawn-out affair, a dry number of months in terms of content, but we have finally made it to Winnipeg Jets game day.
It's basically game on. I mean, we've waited so long. It's hard to believe, Richie, but it's been 9 months since there has been an NHL game in Winnipeg. And I was talking to my roommate Hart about this, yesterday morning. Almost like this game is as anticipated as the Jets' return to Winnipeg. It almost feels like, 15 years we waited for an NHL team to come back, but we've waited 9 months between games. It's unbelievable. So, it's going to be a quick 48-game season, but it's just good to have hockey back. And, there's so much to talk about, so many moves. The Jets were making moves up until yesterday afternoon,
exactly, Richie.
Well, yeah, it's great to have hockey back. I hasn't really said in that we're going to be at the rink today. I'm looking forward to it for sure. The Jets are an interesting team. I'm kind of going back and forth. I know our predictions will be later in the show.
Yes,
some of them aren't yet concrete for me, and so I'll have to make up my mind as we go along.
Exactly. Here's how the show is going to work. This is also going to double as our NHL season preview. So we are going to go division by division, team by team, like only we can. And we're going to preview pretty much everything that you could possibly want to know about the NHL. That's going to be the bulk of the first 2 hours of that program. Coming up, starting at about 9:15 this morning, we go heavy on the Winnipeg Jets for about an entire hour worth of a comprehensive preview of the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets' forward lines, who's going to match up with who? How do we see that playing out? The defensive lines, the goalies, everything that you would want to know about the Winnipeg Jets. 10 a.m., we're going to be joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. He'll talk about the Ottawa point of view for tonight's Jets-Senators game taking place at the MTS Center a little bit later on. We'll do a little bit of an over-under format, over-under Winnipeg Jets wins, over-under certain players' points. Again, very much Jets-focused. And then at 10:30 this morning, Eric Dehatchik. He's probably our favorite guest from the Globe and Mail. We only bring him on a couple times a year to make it an extra special appearance. Today is usually one of those times. He's going to join us, do a comprehensive interview about the NHL and everything we see playing out. And then at 10:45, we're going to do some predictions in regards to the different trophies that are awarded by the NHL. Throughout the course of the show, after we finish, say, with all the Eastern Conference divisions, we'll then do a segment on our Eastern Conference predictions. Who are our playoff teams? Who's going to represent the East, and then we'll do the same thing for the West. Pretty much turn your radios on, leave it locked here all day long. I mean, we have coverage, 12 hours of coverage, of hockey coverage today. You can't ask for anything more. Of course, the pregame show, and then the game itself, and then the postgame show with our buddy Rick Ralph. So leave your radios tuned here to TSN 1290. We have everything in store for you. Let's talk about today's game, a little bit. What do you need to see come from today's game that'll give you sort of optimism for the remainder of the season? Or is that reading too much into one game?
It's always reading too much into one game, I think, Drew. But we're not in an 82-game season here.
Mm-hmm.
And while every game is against the Eastern Conference and against a playoff competitor, that makes every game that much more important.
Take the first... Let's look at the first five Jets games.
Yep.
That'll take you from today, Sunday, night's game against the New York Islanders. The Jets play today. They play that Monday afternoon, 12 o'clock start, which, by the way, I predicted last week, against the Boston Bruins. They play Tuesday in Washington, back home Friday against the Penguins, and then Sunday against the Islanders. What's your minimum threshold? How many points out of those five games do the Jets need to take?
Well, it's a good question, Drew, but you're playing three of those five games at home.
Right.
So you ideally want to at least get 6 of 10. At least. I mean, you can't play 500 hockey because 500 hockey is not 500 hockey anymore.
Sure, with all the three-point games.
Yes.
And that's something that Claude Noel spoke about in his introductory press conference at the MTS Center. He talked about the importance of the clean 2 points, winning in regulation, taking two, not giving your opponent any. Because every game, of course, is in conference where those three-point games matter so much more than they do when you're playing an intra-conference game.
Drew, the first handful of games of the season are important. The first five games are obviously important. First 10 games, whatever you want to define as the beginning of the season, because in a 48-game season, nothing's really going to be normal, right? But the Jets are going to have a really difficult time because the beginning part of their schedule, it's funny. What's completely different? It's not only that a 48-game schedule is short; it's all interconference, right? So you're going to have games against a division that's gotten better. And obviously, I'd agree with Richie, success isn't going to be 500. It's obviously not going to be under 500.
Mm-hmm.
But, the Jets are going to have parts of their schedule that are going to be difficult. And as we alluded to last week, we did our fantasy preview, but we were also doing a bit of a season preview show last week. I said, the good teams will win the back-to-back games, and the good teams will find a way to win on the road. And the Jets are the type of team that are going to have to struggle for every single point they get, both home and away. And when we talked about it last week, the Jets had a lot of success playing teams at home that were coming off a back-to-back game. The road team was coming off a back-to-back game also on the road. And the Jets
played in Chicago or they played in Minnesota
exactly.
The day before and they had to fly in.
Exactly. So when you consider that, the Jets got, quote-unquote, some easy points. But if you look at the schedule in early February, starting February 5th, the Jets start and they have 5 of 6 games at home. They've got the Panthers, Leafs, Flyers, Penguins, Bruins at home. And if you look at those five teams, you could say maybe one of those, being the Leafs, is a game they should win. But as far as the other four games, those are all teams that were above the Jets in the standings. Granted, the Bruins were a team the Jets beat a bunch of times. But the point being that every single game is important.
Yeah.
And it's not really what you do in the first 5 to 10 games, although that's important. It's really what you're going to do for the season and have stretches where you're good and you're bad. Last year, really, the only month where the Jets were successful was December. They had a good homestand and they had a good December. The rest of the season was pretty much 500.
And worse than that, you can't play that way. And I think, Drew, you asked about the first five games of the year. Well, it's not that bad of a schedule. You play at home 3 of the 5 games, of which you don't play any back-to-back games at home. So you play rested tonight or this afternoon. You play rested on Friday. And you play rested on Sunday. Not only that, your back-to-back game is on a Monday, Tuesday this week is a Monday afternoon.
Yeah, and then
Tuesday evening.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take that into account, it's not a very difficult beginning of the schedule. You obviously play Pittsburgh and such, and you play Boston, two really good teams, two of the top three teams in the East, I'd say. But you look at Ottawa, and you look at the Islanders, and you look at Washington. We don't know what they are yet, so it's important that they get off to a good start, and obviously as opposed to getting off to a bad start. But the Jets as a team need to be able to create offense. I think that's maybe getting to exactly what you're trying to ask earlier, Drew. The Jets as a team need to create offense. We don't know. We're going to talk about this later in the show. We don't know Zach Bogosian's injury status. I still don't understand for the life of me how somebody has surgery in September when the season ends in April. But in any event, this team is going to rely on offense to get it done until Bogosian's back.
Right.
Because their defense is not strong enough. And their goaltending, we don't know. It's unpredictable. They've given Andre Pavlik a big contract. Doesn't mean he's going to play up to that big contract. So then you ask, what have they improved at? Well, they've improved at offense. And if they've improved at offense with Olli Jokinen and Alexei Ponikarovsky, and obviously you're going to have a 5-game trial minimum.
With Mark Scheifele.
If you've improved on offense, what do you need to do? You need to score goals to make up for the lack of defense you have. And I think that's going to be vital, especially, you know, we talk about today's game. Ottawa likes the gun. They can skate. They can move the puck. Defense to offense, and they're fast. And Paul MacLean likes to play an up-tempo style of play. To me, the Jets' offense, and obviously it takes time to develop some chemistry between Jokinen and such, but the Jets' offense is going to be an interesting indicator of what the Jets are capable of offensively today, because Ottawa will trade chances. So see what the Jets can create. And the truth is, aside from the Jokinen addition, obviously, and Ponikarovsky has played with Antropov before. So there's no real chemistry issue there. The question really for chemistry is Jokinen. Aside from that, this team has all played together. Little, Ladd, Wheeler, there's no chemistry issues.
And that line's going to stay together.
Right.
And everything we've heard, that line will stay together.
Slater and Thorburn.
Yep.
And the defense for, you know, Bufflin and Enstrom. So aside from that second line or first line, whatever you want to call it, all the lines have, or combinations have played together at some point in the past.
There is the they do have the advantage of familiarity and with each other and with the coaching staff that a lot of the teams that don't have that have new coaches or have new players don't have. The Minnesota Wild, you know, how do Parise and Suter fit in there? The Edmonton Oilers, the new head coach with Ralph Kruger, how do they fit in there? All these sort of things are the an advantage that the Jets have over many of the other teams simply because it's not the brand new. There is some familiarity to the systems and everything else. We'll get into that much more detail later on as we go throughout the next just under 4 hours. When we come back, we're going to start going division by division, team by team, and we start with the Atlantic Division. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. (laughs) 7:15 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Atlantic Division.
We start our team-by-team, division-by-division preview with the Atlantic Division. I think it's safe to say, boys, if you look at the Atlantic Division, that this is the most competitive of all the divisions in the NHL. Anybody object to that statement?
I'll take it one step further. Probably you were getting at this anyways, but no, it's the best division in the NHL. I think the Central Division is good too, but it's the best division in the NHL.
Yeah,
I think it's safe to say if the Stanley Cup winner doesn't come out of this division, the Eastern Conference finalists will most likely come out of this division.
We're in agreement on that front. So it is, yes, it certainly is the most competitive of the divisions. Last year, the division winner was the New York Rangers. They finished with 109 points. I believe they also won. Did they end up winning the Canucks ended up winning the President's Trophy last year.
Yep, the Rangers were first in the East and second in the overall standings.
That's right. Now, you look at this division, and it's sort of an interesting one, because even though the Rangers, you know, were the division winner, it's the least notable of the four playoff teams that came out of this division last year that ended up going the furthest, and that would be the New Jersey Devils. Mm-hmm. We all remember the Devils losing in six games to the Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings. You know, why don't we start with the Rangers first?
Sure.
You know, last year they finished second overall in the NHL. They were 11th in goals for, third in goals against. We all know how terrific their team defense was last year. Their shot blocking was a source of some controversy, but you know the Rangers are a good team, and their additions this year.
It still makes me laugh that was controversial, but
that's fine. Big addition this offseason was Rick Nash.
Yep,
getting him from the Columbus Blue Jackets. In exchange, they had to give up Artem Anisimov, Brandon Dubinsky, and Tim Erickson. They've also lost Ruslan Fedotenko and Brandon Proust. Their other additions were Piatt, Halpern, and Asham.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously Nash is worth his weight in gold by strictly name value. How important is Rick Nash going to be as an addition to the New York Rangers?
Well, he's a huge addition, Drew, because you look at the holes on the squad last year. Goals for rank was 11th. Now, that's in the top half of the league, almost the top third. Having said that, Rick Nash, and well, you know, you lose Anisimov and you lose Dubinsky. Dubinsky obviously had an awful year last year offensively. Anisimov had skill, but he's not in the same class. So you've added, in reality, between Anisimov and Dubinsky, you'll be able to replace those guys with somebody like Kreider or whatever it may be, whatever they choose to replace it with. But Nash is better than both of them, and he's one of the elite scorers in the league. So you've taken that 11th-ranked goals for, you've probably improved it. your goals against rank, you really haven't, there's really no drawback there, because Tim Erickson wasn't on the big squad last year, and Tim Erickson, whenever he reaches a big squad, will be more of an offensive defenseman. So you lose Anisimov, Dubinsky, Fedotenko, and Prusa. That's not that much offense. Nash may be able to equal the goal, probably exceed the goal total of all those guys combined last year. It's possible. Playing with a guy like Brad Richards, it's possible. So you look at that, then you look at the power play. Because the penalty killing and goals against Ezzy, they're so good. Lundqvist and the defense hasn't changed at all. So you've added Nash. You've gotten rid of more of the second to third line guys, and you've added Rick Nash to the squad. You have a motivated coach and John Tortorella, a guy like Glenn Sather who knows what he's doing. I personally think the Rangers are the best team in the Eastern Conference this year.
Richie, I think when you add Rick Nash, who came into the league and got 41 goals and was really playing with good NHL players but never playing with a good player, and then you put him with, pardon me, a great player, you put him with Brad Richards, and now... I think you're right. I think now you've made a great team, a team that almost got to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. You've made a great team, the best team. And you're right. The Rangers lost some depth players, but really, if you look at the team, same goalie, same defense. Michael Delzato was re-signed. You've got arguably the best defense group in the league defensively. They don't necessarily have, you know, the top offensive defenseman. They don't have a Carlson or someone like that, but as a group, they're amazing defensively. And you add Rick Nash, the Rangers are going to be so tough to beat on a regular basis. And, you know, the Penguins and Flyers are both obviously good teams, but Rick Nash, and we don't know if they're necessarily going to keep the big three together, the other guy obviously being Gabrick, but on the power play, that was the problem. The Rangers obviously... probably couldn't have made that move and still been a good team. But now they've added Rick Nash, so you have a huge weapon on the power play. And you're really talking about a team now that will still play the same style. They're not going to... It's not like they've got Rick Nash and they're going to open up the style too much. But now you've got such a good player that is going to allow them to be that much better.
Well, one thing before Drew, we go. Glenn Sather needs full credit, because you can take on a salary... like Rick Nash, when you have these four defensemen under contract for all under $4 million, Stahl, Girardi, Delzato, and McDonough, those four, only one's making over $3.3 million. That's incredible contract work by Glenn Sather and Gordon, et cetera, in New York.
Very good value on the back end of the blue, for the New York Rangers. The Pittsburgh Penguins, of course, are they're always the sexy pick because they have Crosby and Malkin. Their offseason additions this year certainly are their subtractions are more impressive than their additions. They lost Jordan Staal, obviously, in the trade to Carolina when it became obvious he wasn't interested in re-signing there. They also lost, you know, some other, Steve Sullivan, who had played a role for them. Not as big of a loss, of course. Zibanejad Mihalik was traded back to the Phoenix Coyotes last year. Their additions this year were Brandon Sutter, Tanner Glass, and Thomas Vokoun. Penguins are they expect to get a healthy Crosby for... Well, they'll start there with the question. How important is a healthy Crosby for an entire season to the Penguins' Stanley Cup hopes?
It's very important. I wouldn't say it's everything, because remember when Sidney Crosby went down, guys, the Pittsburgh Penguins, with the first concussion, not the second concussion, the concussion in the Winter Classic, the Penguins did very well. The Penguins are an extremely good team, and when you've got Evgeny Malkin on the team, you can lose Crosby, and you can still be a good team. I think we'd all agree with that. But if the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to get back to 2009 and winning the Stanley Cup, they need a healthy Crosby. Because in 2009, when they beat the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals, they were absolutely dominant because you had Crosby and Malkin. But I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins this year, and I don't know necessarily that they've gotten worse, gotten better. They're essentially the same team, except obviously they made the Jordan Staal, Brandon Sutter trade, and they've, like you mentioned, Steve Sullivan's gone.
Let me interrupt you for a second. You mentioned you don't know if they've gotten better or they've gotten worse. Is their defense, the subtraction of Zibanejad Mihalik, is their defense good enough for this team to make a run?
Yeah, it is good enough for them to make a run. I mean, but the question is, what happens with their young players? I mean, they have a lot of good young defense talent in the system. Pouliot, Olli Määttä, you have Harrington, as people saw, Canadian, playing in the World Juniors, Joe Morrow. Do they elevate some of those guys throughout the year? How many of them get some playing time? More importantly, do they use some of those assets to turn it into maybe a more ready-made defenseman, into an offensive need if they have one. So those are questions that need to be asked. But, you know, back to your original question, Drew, about the defense as it is, I'll say this. The defense as constructed with the guys they have on the books right now, unless there are moves made with those prospects and you're bringing guys up or doing whatever it may be, the defense, if it's the veteran D they have, that's not good enough.
To me, Richie, when you look back at 2009 and they had the monster known as Hal Gill, who is obviously on Nashville now, and you had Rob Scuderi, those are your shutdown guys. And to me, I agree with Richie. I think that's why they'll probably pick up a guy. But I think that during the season, this is a short season, this is an offensive team. You got Chris Letang, obviously, and then Brooks Orpik is your shutdown defenseman who's going to play big minutes. But I don't think it's as good as it was 3 or 4 years ago. But I think it's good enough that it'll get them into the playoffs, obviously, and probably I say, you know, fourth or fifth seed.
But let's look at that. You got Niskanen and Eglund. I mean, those guys can't compete with other teams' top two lines. Orpik and, you know, you have Martin, and yeah, you have obviously.
I mean, Paul Martin's slotted in there, your top right wing defenseman, and he wasn't very good last year.
No, he's terrible. The question to me is, you know, I guess. Can Joe Morrow take a step? Can he be a difference maker? They got Desprez as well.
Yep.
So can those guys take the step? Because the veteran that they had last year, as you saw against Philly, were not good enough. So.
I know they've been high on Desprez, but I still think that the defense is good, but they're going to have to pick somebody up. Because in the playoffs, it comes down to those defensive defensemen. Look at L.A., you know, Matt Green, and you got to have those workhorses. So they've probably got to make an acquisition on the free agent wire later in the season, I'd say.
Probably the most entertaining team on the ice, off the ice, during the offseason is always the Philadelphia Flyers. They never seem to be too far away from the headlines. Again, they had some additions this year. Probably most notably being Luke Shen, who was acquired in exchange for James Van Riemsdyk. Their losses this year, Sergei Bobrovsky, he went to Columbus. Mm-hmm. He went to Columbus. Matt Carl went back to Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken.
To
Tampa Bay. Jaromir Jagr went to Dallas, and Pavel Kubina. I mean, he was their seventh defenseman last year for the most part. Do the Flyers? I mean, this is sort of the same question. Yeah, I said Van Riemsdyk. Same question. Do the Flyers have enough defense right now? We know they have the offensive punch, and how confident are you in relying on Ilya Bryzgalov? Combination, defense and Bryzgalov.
Well, I think, Richie, Ilya Bryzgalov takes a lot of heat. And we all know from the 24/7 documentary that he's a bombastic personality. And I actually think he's awesome for hockey. And I think he's a great goalie and, all that. But Philadelphia has so much talent there. And right off the bat, let's say that, Claude Giroux's the captain. They didn't have a captain last year because Chris Pronger, unfortunately, he'll be a Hall of Famer. And his career's over because of the concussions. And Chris Pronger wasn't there last year. So right off the bat, let's not say that, how are they going to do without Chris Pronger? Because he wasn't there last year, and the Flyers had one of the best teams in the NHL. So I like the Luke Shen acquisition. That was a trade I thought that, both teams won. The Toronto Maple Leafs got their winger that they wanted in Van Riemsdyk. But Mezeros is injured, and that's a big issue for them. Mezeros is one of their top four defensemen. And they're going to struggle a little bit, I think. But the one thing that I think that I don't worry about with the Philadelphia Flyers is they have so much talent in their top six forwards that, they'll score so many goals. Winnipeg Jets fans remember what happened last year. So, again, same thing, similar situation to the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think that their defense is a little bit weaker than it was, a year or two ago, but they're still good enough that they'll be a top team.
Goaltending is the key here to me. I mean, you look at the defense quickly, you look at Coburn and Timonen and Grossman, those guys are good 1-3 in terms of the left side defensemen. But then you got Shen, and then who else you got?
Bruno Jarret.
And what's happening with Mezeros? What is he, not only when injured, healthy, what does he provide when healthy? So to me, your top nine's great. You can skate, you can do everything.
Your obviously, top nine forwards.
Yeah, obviously Briere, his health is going to be important.
Yeah, Briere won't play this weekend. Right. They expect to have him back probably within the week or so after that.
But the question is, can Bryzgalov make up for the defensive deficiencies? Last year, they were 20th in goals against, and their penalty killing was bottom half of the league too. And the question is, why? Well, I mean, there's a variety of reasons, but he was the main reason why, because their goaltending was terrible. If he can provide goaltending that makes up for the loss of a guy like Pronger, at least to some extent, The offense and the combination of speed, skill, and size should be able to make them a dangerous opponent, although I don't think they're in the same class as Boston, Rangers, and Pittsburgh.
Richie, it's not like he's under contract for 8 more years. So
he probably won't be after this year when they buy him out in the summer, but that's a separate issue altogether.
That's a lot of expensive buyout there, Drew.
Of course it is. New Jersey, the Stanley Cup runner-up. They sort of came out of nowhere to get that far, and just based on the losses there, you expect that they wouldn't get that far again. I mean, they lost, of course, Zach Parise, Alex Ponikarovsky, Peter Sikora, Taramina, and Bolton are their losses. Their additions are, you know, Chris Barch.
Yeah, I mean, their additions, their additions are really not
negligible.
Relevant.
Yeah.
Their additions would be the equivalent of replacement players, probably.
They picked up Matthew Darche. I think he made the team. Montreal didn't re-sign him. But the thing with New Jersey is, it all starts with Parise. Let's be honest. It all starts with Parise, and it all starts with can Brodeur give them goaltending like he always does? Yes, of course. I would say yes. But the Devils, in my opinion, have taken a step back. We know that Adam Henrique is starting the season on the injured list. That's a huge blow right there. They've given Travis Zajac, and I know you guys are going to jump on this about the contract, but they gave Travis Zajac an 8-year deal, and he's their number one center. And he's consistent every year. He's going to give them, you know what he's going to get, give the New Jersey Devils. The New Jersey Devils, to me, by taking Zach Parise out of the lineup, and they, by the way, congratulations to Bryce Salvador for being named team captain. To me, that's too big of a loss for them. And that's why I think the Devils, even though you guys know I love them, I think they're not going to make the playoffs this year because you're going to lose that offense. You're going to have an injury early on in the season. And I don't know if they're going to be able to, with the guys, other guys they have on the team, I don't know if they're going to be able to survive without that.
You can't lose all that skill and not replace it and think you're going to be at the same level. But there is no guarantee, in my opinion. The defense is okay. It's not great. The offense leaves room to be desired. And I think
same group as last year. Exact same. And it was a no-name group last year.
I'm talking
about the defense.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the defense is fine. I mean, it's whatever. Yeah. But you look at the offense and you say, okay, Parise. But the more important thing, guys, is I think they could have made up for Parise's loss. But the Henrique injury in a shortened season is debilitating as far as I'm concerned because he's your second-line center, and he's damn good.
Yep.
He's good. And you lose him, and then what are you doing up the middle? You know, the question also is Eliash back in the middle? And as he can speak to this, is Eliash at his best in the middle, or is he playing? He's done it before, early in his career, later in his career. I still think he's better on the wing.
Just quickly, I don't think he is. I actually think he's better on the wing. But you're looking at Jakob Josefsson as your second-line center, a guy that has limited NHL experience, injury problems. So with no Parise and obviously Henrique on the injured list, they're going to start off the season severely worse than they were last year.
Very quickly, the final team in the Atlantic Division, the New York Islanders. I'll throw this one out there. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Islanders finish ahead of the Devils. I'll let you guys handle the Islanders from this point on.
Just don't pick the Canucks to miss the playoffs this year.
Good one, Izzy. You know, in terms of the Islanders, Drew, I actually like they have a nice base. You got Strome and you got Griffin Reinhardt and Nina Ryder and all those guys. But this is not the year.
No, they're still a couple years away.
Can they surprise some teams? Vishnovsky, what happens with him is going to be interesting, but their defense...
They need Vishnovsky on the back end.
The defense, again, is something that leaves a lot of room to be desired. Matt Karkner was given a 3-year contract for who knows why. Hamonic's an underrated defenseman, Winnipeg boy, but otherwise he's really weak on the back end. DiPietro is no guarantee to stay healthy. And Nabokov, you'd hope that they'd trade him for some kind of an asset. Up front, they do have some nice pieces, and I think in a couple of years you're going to see the Brooklyn Islanders, whatever, or the New York Islanders playing in Brooklyn will be a team that will be maybe to be reckoned with in a few years. But this is not the year to be frightened. On off nights, they play hard. They play hard.
Yep.
For Capuano.
We saw them play last year.
Yeah, so they play hard for him. But
in New York, I should qualify.
We saw them three times last year.
Yeah, we saw them a lot last year. Richie's right. They're not going to frighten anybody this year. And the thing that I'm going to look with for the Islanders is a guy like Nino Niederreiter, like Richie mentioned previously, and other players on the team, how they're going to develop. They're just not good enough defensively. But John Tavares, he's now a superstar in the league. He proved that last year by being top 15 in the league in scoring. They're just too far away. The goaltending, Nabokov, I'm not confident, or in DiPietro. I still have them bottom of the division. Like Richie said, Jack Capuano does a good job. They're a competitive team. They don't have enough firepower to compete in that division.
Last year, they were in the They were in the bottom third in every significant category we've discussed except for power play. Bottom third.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Northeast Division. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Seven 7:35 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Northeast Division.
Northeast Division. We start with the team, the best team in the Northeast Division last year, the Boston Bruins. You know, very good year. Seventh overall in the NHL last year. Third in terms of goals for. Sixth in terms of goals against last year. And then the very disappointing first-round defeat at the hands of the Washington Capitals. The additions this year, not very much. You know, Garnet Exelby, that's their biggest addition.
From Manitoba.
They lost Joe Corvo, Benoit Pouliot, Greg Zanin, Tim Thomas, who's sitting out this year to, well, do whatever it is Tim Thomas does. So the Bruins really did stand pat.
I believe he's campaigning for the Democratic Party.
I'm sure, yeah. The Democratic Party, exactly. You know,
Jeb Bush 2016.
I don't think Jeb Bush is too right wing enough for him, but anyways, that's a separate issue altogether. The Bruins, was last year's first round defeat to the Capitals just an aberration, and are they poised to regain their spot at the top of the Northeast Division?
I think it's an aberration, Drew. I think this team's loaded still on offense. You always kind of question sometimes their defense, but at the same time, they do it every year, so you have to stop questioning it. I really like the progression of a guy like Johnny Boychuk. I think he's taken the next step. He's improved his skating. Overall, this team is very deep. Nathan Horton's back. Tyler Seguin's poised to take the next step. You look at their lineup 1 through 12, and I don't know if you have a better 1 through 12 lineup in the East. And so you look at Rask. Well, Rask can carry what Thomas left. I mean, Rask is a very good goaltender. And it was only a couple of years ago that Rask was getting a lot of time. So you look at their overall stats. I mean, their score last year, they prevent goals. Their power play can improve a bit. They were number one in the NHL in faceoffs. I mean, that happens when you got a lot of centers playing out of place, too. You have more than enough depth. Obviously, you have Patrice Bergeron, one of the best centermen in the National Hockey League.
Sulky winner.
But when you look at strength and you look at the teams that win, whether it be Chicago, whether it be Pittsburgh, whether it be Detroit, whether it be L.A., or whether it be Boston, what do they have? Strength up the middle. Look at Boston centerman, Krejci, Bergeron, Sagan, depending on where you're going to play him and how you want to play him, Gregory Campbell,
Chris Kelly.
I mean, you're strong up the middle. You have a big defenseman in Chara. That's another big guys who are good, and you have good goaltending, and you have a very good coach and a good management. I see no reason to think that this team won't win the division this year and be a contender once again.
Even though it's tough to add, because I agree with every single thing Richie said there, but first off, right off the bat, Tuukka Rask is an excellent goaltender. Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot to prove, as he's only on a one-year contract.
He's got a lot to prove, but he's already played number one goal at an early age for the Boston Bruins. We know he can do it. Whether you want to look at goals against or save percentage or whatever, he's an elite goalie. So right off the bat, they've got an excellent goaltender. But again, you mentioned no moves. But again, you look at their team, and they're young, and they've re-signed their key pieces, whether it's Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Chris Kelly. They sign their guys within, and then when they lose a defenseman like Joe Corvo, they promote Dougie Hamilton, who's going to be a very good defenseman. So exactly.
Which is certainly a good trade-off if you're a Boston Bruins fan.
Right. And
Dougie Hamilton for Joe Corvo you do every day.
He's going to be an eventual top four defenseman for the team. But again, Zdeno Chara, elite defenseman. Patrice Bergeron, elite. Tyler Seguin led the team. He's an up-and-coming superstar. So top to bottom, and again, this is anything Richie hasn't said, but they're just such a solid team. And again, nobody's predicting the Bruins to win the Stanley Cup this year, but in a crazy shortened season, if you look at the depth they have, the youth, the mix of size and toughness, It's hard to not pick them as a top team. It just you can't ignore how solid. 5-on-5, they might be the best team in the NHL.
You're not wrong about that. The second team out of the Northeast that made the playoffs last year was the team that the Jets will play today. That's the Ottawa Senators. They finished 16th overall in the NHL. Had a very entertaining seven-game series against the New York Rangers last year, mm-hmm. where they were. Did it go into overtime that game?
2-1 final. I don't think.
Yeah, maybe it didn't go into overtime, but they were very close to defeating the Rangers. We talked about their offensive prowess. Fourth overall in the NHL in goals last year. Mm-hmm. 24th in goals against. Their additions this year, Guillaume Latendresse up front.
I like him.
Mike Lundin and Mark Matheau on the back end. Both of those guys will be on the back end there. And the guys that they lost this year, Nick Foligno, Bobby Butler, Nikita Filatov, Philippe Kuba, and Zenon Konopka. This, is the arrow still pointing up for the Ottawa Senators? And how high does it go this year?
I think they're still a good team. I think the problem that I have with the Ottawa Senators is I think they overachieved last year, and I think that other teams in the Eastern Conference have gotten better, namely the Carolina Hurricanes, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Buffalo Sabres weren't very far behind a playoff spot last year. I still think the future looks bright in Ottawa. I actually am not going to have them as a playoff team, but I still think that they're extremely skilled. Richie mentioned that he likes Guillaume Latendresse. I do, too. I think that he was a good pickup. And Jason Spezza, after being a consistent 90-point guy and then having back-to-back seasons where people in Ottawa were saying he shouldn't be traded, reemerged as one of the best players in the NHL. So I think that things are pointing up. I just think that they overachieved. But having said that, they've got good goaltending, strong in defense. Mark Matheau is going to play with Erik Karlsson. So I think they're going to compete for a playoff spot. I just think that the other teams that, nothing against the Ottawa Senators, I think the other teams have gotten better. That's why I don't have them in the playoffs this year.
They're an interesting team and a hard one to predict because the teams that come and surprise everybody, you really wonder what they'll do next year when the league has a read on them. Having said that, their power play was 11th last year. I think it can be better because they have guys who are so good on the power play like Erik Karlsson and Spezza.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see room for improvement there. 24th in the league in goals against. They do have a trio of netminders in Leonard and Bishop and Anderson, all who are capable of going on runs.
And they expect to start the season with Craig Anderson and Ben Bishop because those are both the guys who are on one-way contracts. But Robin Leonard is probably the best of the three.
Yeah. Long-term, he is.
Long-term. I'm not talking about... Yeah, long-term.
Long-term, he is,
yeah.
For sure. But, if you look at Bishop and Anderson are both big netminders, but I think that's important because people really like Ben Bishop, and if you're able to play two netminders in a shortened season, that may be a benefit to you. So I can see their goals against improving.
Yep.
It's going to be hard to score the fourth most goals in the league, but, Drew, this is the thing. Mihailuk's health is important. Silverberg, if he performs, is important, and Latendresse. There are a lot of question marks, but I do worry more so about their back end. The Jared Cowan injury to me is massive.
Yep.
And how do you replace him?
He's gone for the season.
And what happens with a guy like Gonchar's getting older? The first pairing is fine. We talked about the pairing. Phillips is getting a little bit more gray in the beard. Him and Gonchar, how do they fend off the opposing team's defense? Who are they playing with, and how do they perform? Their defense, I think, costs them in being able to sustain what they did last year.
Moving along, the Buffalo Sabres, who were probably the off-season winners last year with all their additions, but
player-wise, not contract-wise.
Well, fine. Player-wise, not contract-wise. But that didn't translate to anything positive on the ice. They finished 19th overall in the NHL, out of the playoffs. Goals for 17th, goals against 18th. They were the definition of a middling team. They finished right in that 15 to 20 range in pretty much every stat category. This year, their additions were Steve Ott, Adam Party, and John Scott. They subtracted from their team Brad Boyes and Derek Roy. At the very least, they're going to be a more difficult team to play against.
When watching them last year, watching them in the offseason, you wonder, were they watching Adam Party? I know Buffalo had at times cut back their scouting department, and they were using a lot more film. Were they watching Adam Party on fast forward?
You're saying he's slow?
Because they signed him, and we're just like, why would you sign him to that contract? He's already buried in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, he's back in the minors.
And they signed John Scott, who's the only guy in the league slower than Adam Party.
John Scott is they picked up John Scott specifically to scrap.
He's playing fourth line left wing apparently for them. In any event, Drew, the question back to your question. They've lost Brad Boyes, not a great skater, a guy who can score but wasn't performing there. Derek Roy, and they replaced Roy with a guy Steve Ott, good on faceoffs, a gritty guy, etc. Want to add more grit. Cody Hodgson's the key there.
because they acquired him at the trade deadline from Vancouver.
And he's lining up with Vanek and Pominville on the top line.
Look at the talent, though. You look at Ennis. I love Ennis. He's my breakout pick of the year. Vanek, Pominville, Ville Leino, Drew Stafford, Grigorenko, great talent. Wonder what's going to happen with him. But Hodgson, Nathan Gerby, they brought back, heck, Myers. I'm reading the whole roster, but there's skill there. And there's Ryan Miller. You can't help but think they're going to be better.
Richie,
talent-wise,
you mentioned Tyler Ennis, and I know you've been on high on him for 2 years now, and he'll be the second line center. I have the Sabres making the playoffs. I don't know if you guys do, but they finished ninth. They didn't finish that far out of the playoffs last year, and they underachieved big time. Ryan Miller, you know, we talked about it last week with Justin Goldman of the Goalie Guild. Last year, it was a tale of two seasons. He went on I think it was 19-3-2 run last year, Ryan Miller. He's still, in my opinion, one of the top three goaltenders in the NHL. I think Mikhail Grigorenko is going to stick with the team, and he's going to be one of the top rookies this year. I think the Sabres are going to have a bounce back year because they just underachieved too much last year. I think Cody Hodgson will be fine as the top line center. You know what you're going to get with Vanek and Pominville.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think they're a playoff team. Look at their team top to bottom. I say, how is this not a playoff team?
You just agreed big time on the last two teams. I like that.
Moving on to Toronto, and I would think both of you guys would say this is not a playoff team with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They finished 25th in the NHL last year. Their goals against was horrendous at 29th in the league. Their additions, James Van Riemsdyk, Jay McClement, Keith O'Coin, who I believe is already back down and playing for the Marlies.
He's already on waivers. He got claimed yesterday, I thought.
Yes, that's right. He did get claimed by somebody
Florida,
there.
Florida, maybe?
Florida or the Islanders? I thought the Islanders. But I'll double-check on that. They lost Colby Armstrong, Jonas Gustafsson, Luke Shen. You know, still yet another rebuilding year for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, yeah, but it seems like they have a little more of a vision of that rebuilding than they did before.
With the firing of Brian Burke, you're saying?
Yeah, and you know what? You look at the Leafs, and there's nothing there to inspire confidence. Let's be honest, okay? There's nothing there to inspire confidence. But you're trying to clear out. Right, you're going to try and play the younger guys. You're going to want something from Kadri, get something of value for some of the older players, maybe on the squad. But this team, from top to bottom, Carlisle will improve their goals against.
Yep.
And goaltending is one reason why their goals against was bad, but coaching is the other. And it's kind of like when Mika Kiprusoff used to play for Mike Keenan. He didn't suddenly get bad. The offensive coach came in and left the goaltender out to dry. Suddenly, when Sutter came back in, he was good. When Brent Sutter came in, he was suddenly good again, quote unquote. He didn't lose it. So, when you look at Toronto, their goaltending will be better only because Randy Carlisle's in there instilling more of a defensive conscious. But top to bottom, this roster is awful.
Randy Carlisle, and Richie's right. Again, we couldn't say enough good things about Randy Carlisle. He's going to make things better. He brought he brought back Colton Orr, who's going to play again for the Leafs. And to me, when I look at how they returned Morgan Riley to the Moose Jaw Warriors of the WHL instead of rushing him, I actually like that decision because I think Morgan Riley has future number one defenseman potential, and I think you guys would agree with that. Mm-hmm. But you look at who's starting on defense, Mike Koska, who's never played an NHL game. Corbinian Holzer, I believe, is also made the 23-man roster. You've got Phaneuf and Gunnarsson as your top two defensemen. Phaneuf actually had a good season last year offensively. But, again, they're not going to score enough goals. James Reimer, good Manitoba boy, and Ben Scrivens did well in the NHL. But, you know, with the defense group that they have, it's going to be tough to see those guys stealing games on a regular basis. James Reimer, I think he's a number one goaltender in the NHL, but I don't think he's a top number one goaltender in the NHL. He struggles with a lot of things. So I think you add all of those things up, and I think the Leafs will be a little bit better than last year and probably a little less sporadic, but I still have them around, you know, 12th, 13th in the Eastern Conference.
The final team in the Northeast Division, the Montreal Canadiens, just a horrendous year for the Canadiens, top to bottom last year. Their additions this year, Colby Armstrong, Francois Bouillon, Brandon Proust. They lost, you know, Matthew Darche and a couple other sort of bit players. You know, the numbers for the Canadiens last year weren't as bad as where they finished in the standings. You know, how do you see the Canadiens year playing out with Michel Therrien as their head coach?
Well, let's talk. I mean, I think this team can be better than people think, but let's talk about the fact that P.K. Subban isn't signed.
And that's the key subtraction right now. Without P.K. Subban, they have no chance.
Yeah, I agree. Because you look at their offense, and, you know, Plekanec, I like Plekanec's two-way game as a center. I think David Desharnais is really underrated. He really came to his own last year. Pacioretty took the next step, a guy I've always really liked. You get grittier with Proust, grittier with Armstrong. Galchenyuk could be a key there, playing the wing. Rene Bork and Eric Cole, kind of guys who get 20 to 30 goals, and if they're, you know, if they're playing 82 games and skating hard and can be physical at times. And then you look at their power play. Last year, 28th in the league. This year, Markov looks to be healthy. Huge improvement. PK Subban obviously would be key there as well. Their PK, obviously different coaches and such, but their PK was second. You know, a team that I think could be a pleasant surprise if everything falls into line there.
I think you mentioned Alex Galchenyuk, Richie, and we know how well he played for the U.S. team that won the gold medal at the World Junior Championships. And it looks like Michel Therrien is going to use him in a top six role. Galchenyuk is a stud. When we had Craig Button on last year, he said, I might take Galchenyuk first. And looks like it's actually looking to be a pretty good draft with Jacob Trouba, and we mentioned Morgan Riley earlier, but I'm digressing here. I mean, I think the Montreal Canadiens will be better than last year. Scotty Gomez was bought out, obviously, so that was a distraction last year. PK Subban concerns me a little bit, because apparently he wanted the amount of years that Drew Doughty wanted, 7 years, and they offered him 2 to 3 years. So that situation concerns me, and I think that you don't want another distraction, and it seems like they're a little bit far apart. We don't know if he's going to sign in the next few days or if it's going to take a month, but I think the Habs will be improved, and I think Galchenyuk, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year, the Habs, by the way. Sorry to disappoint you Habs fans, but I think Galchenyuk is going to be a very good top rookie in the NHL this year.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't obviously speak to the fact that they could have arguably the top three goalie in the league in Carey Price.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Carey Price is so good, you almost don't have to talk about him. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Southeast Division minus the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We continue with our division-by-division, team-by-team preview ahead of today's Jets-Senators game, which gets underway here on this fine station at 2 p.m.
Southeast Division.
The Southeast Division, the division that for one more year is the home to your Winnipeg Jets. We'll cover the Jets in detail for about an hour coming up a little bit later on in the program. So we'll skip the Jets in terms of in the preview of this division. And we'll start with the division winner from last year, the Florida Panthers. They are the division winner, but yet they finished 14th overall in the NHL. Their additions this year, Philippe Kuba, Peter Mueller, George Parros. Their subtractions, Jason Garrison, Samuelson, and Wolski. Can the Florida Panthers, who for a lot of people did it based on smoke and mirrors last year, do again what they did last season?
I think they can. I don't think they will. That's right.
yes, anybody can do
exactly.
Anything.
But will they do it, and can they? No. The Florida Panthers last year surprised a lot of people, myself included. Yeah. You start in goal with the combination of Jose Theodore and Scott Clements, and they did a great job. You look at how the Florida Panthers did against the Jets last year in 8 games. They beat the Jets handily last year. I still look at the team, and I see, you know, Steven Weiss had a very good year. You're bringing in Jonathan Huberdeau. You know, Fleischmann and Versteeg are your top wingers. I still look at the team, and it doesn't, you know, slap me in the face and say, you know, this is a really solid team like the Boston Bruins or the Philadelphia Flyers or the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yet they managed to get, you know, into the playoffs even though they lost in the first round to the New Jersey Devils.
But it's an entertaining 7-game series.
It was an entertaining seven-game series. They were a competitive team. Brian Campbell was unbelievable last year, and to me he was the key. Eddie Jovanovski was just recently named team captain after being the 94 first-round pick. I look at the team, and it's a good team, and I think they'll be competitive, but I just don't, again, I think they overachieved last year, and I know, you know, a lot of people will argue with that, but I don't think that they can replicate it. And Dmitry Kulikov, we know, is now signed. He was an RFA, very good defenseman, and they've got a lot of depth, but I just look at their team, and I just don't see them doing what they did last year.
Richard.
Yeah. It's hard again. This team is a difficult team. I think a lot of their season is dependent on the second line as it stands right now.
Yep.
And that's Peter Mueller. Concussion problems in the past, no question about offensive skill level, although he's gone back and forth from being faster, bigger, smaller.
Jonathan Huberdeau,
and Alexei Kovalev. I mean, are there three bigger wild cards there?
No.
I think their season's very much dependent on the production of the second line. Does Huberto come up and tear? I mean, offensively skilled. We know he's offensively skilled. Mueller is
19 years old,
healthy. If he's healthy. And Kovalev is as skilled as it gets. Can't skate like he used to, but you have the top line with Weiss, with Versteeg, guys like that, and then you can fill out the third, fourth lines with a number of players. You know, they're going to try and go more banger for the fourth line. You've added Jovanovski, you've added you lost Garrison, but you've, I think, improved your depth. Kulikov, a year older, a year more mature.
Did sign, I believe, last night.
Yeah, 2 years, $5 million, I think. Yeah. Yeah, 2 days ago, whatever it was. But then you got your goaltending issue. So, I mean, the second line, the goaltending is the key to me.
And those were strengths last year. So Mikael Samuelsson's gone,
right,
and now Huberto's your second-line center. And I think Huberto is, like Galchenyuk, like Yakupov, is going to be one of the top rookies. But is he going to be able to give you 50, 60 points, be a consistent guy?
A prorated 50, 60 points.
Yeah. Sure, yeah, exactly. A prorated 50 or 60 points, but you know, close to a point a game. I think he'll struggle with that. And I think the goaltending, even though it was good last year, is not elite. So I think that in a shortened season, knowing Carolina is going to be better, knowing Tampa is going to be better, I think you take away those points that they got last year, and it's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs. I think not only do they not win the division, I don't think they make the playoffs.
I don't think they do either. I think Ezzie's right on that, but I think this division is just a complete and total crapshoot.
The Washington Capitals finished 15th overall in the NHL last year. They had a decent run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They beat the Boston Bruins in the first round and took the Rangers to 7 games in the second round. Mm-hmm. Their additions this year, Mike Ribeiro, Woltek Wolski, those are the big ones. They did lose Alex Semin to free agency. They lost Jeff Halpern, Dennis Wiedemann, Thomas Vokoun, and Cody Eakin, who was traded to the Dallas Stars in exchange for Ribeiro. Do the Capitals regain the Southeast Division title?
I think they do. I have them predicted. You saw my predictions, Drew, for later in the show. I think they do. But, again, you're looking at, and Adam Oates, I think, is the key here, right? You're looking
Adam
at
Oates is the new head coach there.
It's a team that, looking at the squad, I do like. I have some question marks about the squad. I think this division is completely up for grabs, and I just said that before. Backstrom and Ovechkin, and this is an easy one here in terms of what's important. Is Backstrom healthy? It said it's not a concussion. It's more of a neck problem. What happens there? Does Ovechkin regain his old form? Because then, you know, Ribeiro can anchor your second line, create some offense for guys with Wolski or Brower or whoever it may be, and then your third and fourth lines can go to town. And your defense is solid, and you have some depth, and maybe even getting Pody back, and you had some good goaltending. If Oates can get Backstrom, didn't play badly last year, but if Oates can get Backstrom and Ovechkin back to their old form, this is their division to lose.
And keeps them healthy, especially in Backstrom's case, keeps them healthy for the entire season.
If they can't, I mean, they can easily miss the playoffs. It's no shoo-in.
I think, Richie, that you're right. Adam Oates is the key. Obviously, he was with the New Jersey Devils as an assistant coach. He got the Devils, who weren't one of the, you know, talent-wise top teams, number one penalty kill in the NHL last year. Adam Oates is going to make the Washington Capitals' special teams better, and he's going to open it up. And I think Alexander Ovechkin is going to be back into the top 10 in the league in scoring last year. People are saying, oh, is he ever going to get back to 85, 95 points? I think he will this year. I think his confidence was... I think, you know, Dale Hunter did certain good things with the Washington Capitals in the one season or whatever that he was the coach. But I think Adam Oates is going to change a lot of things, himself being a good offensive player. It's going to help Nicklas Backstrom. But I think the Washington Capitals are strong in net. Braden Holtby, good Saskatchewan boy. But I think their penalty killing and power play, which were putrid last year, is going to get better. So, you know, I think they're going to make the playoffs and be a much more competitive team than they were last year, even though they shocked a lot of people by winning their first round matchup.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, we know that they can score. Any team with Steven Stamkos, Vincent Lecavalier, and Martin St. Louis can score. Mm-hmm. Eighth overall in the league in goals for last year. Can they keep the puck out of their own net? They were dead last, 30th last year. Pretty much this boils down to, is Anders Lindback the answer in net?
And also, Drew, you know, you add Salo and Carl.
That's right.
Guys who can move the puck out of your own zone. You spend less time in your own zone, your goalies have less pressure on them, the puck's in the offensive end more often. I like the moves they've made. They haven't lost anybody, really. Bruno Gervais is the only guy they've lost. Not significant. You add Pouliot. Maybe he can. Guy Boucher can get something from him. But you're right. You're exactly right, Drew, that Lindback is the key. But their defense looks a lot deeper. And those are both puck movers who can pass. And Salo's got that cannon of a shot. Like, Tampa did good things here. This is, I said, that's a tough division. And
it's not the Southeast anymore.
No, it's not the Southeast anymore. And if I'm looking at this squad, top to bottom, you put them up against any team in this division easily, I think. And I think Guy Boucher is the best coach in the division.
Yeah, I like the Lightning. The Lightning will be back in the playoffs, as far as I'm concerned, this year. Guy Boucher, great coach. They've improved. I think Sammy Salo is almost a bigger addition than Matt Carl, even though everyone looks at his offensive prowess. But again, Teddy Purcell, if you look at the stats last year, he scored a hat trick against the Jets, but importantly, he was one of the top offensive players in the NHL in the second half, and a great player. Corey Conacher is going to make the team. Mm-hmm. Brett Connolly is a second year. I think he'll be better because he struggled big time last year. But the forward group, like Richie said, aside from Pouliot, is exactly the same. But I think, again, look at their special teams. Drew was putrid. You improve that a little bit, and I think you're going to gain more points and be back in the playoffs.
Final one other thing to note. Last year, Tampa had the 25th best power play in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just awful.
With the skill level that they have and with the additions of Salo and Carl.
Got a 60-goal score there, Richie, on the half boards.
Well, exactly. And but you look at the additions, Ezzy, that they put up on the blue line. And the maturation of Victor Hedman.
Yep.
And I think the power play takes a step up, and I think this team is a team to be reckoned
Their
with.
Their top four is now a legitimate NHL top four on the back end.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Yeah. The final team, aside from the Jets in the Southeast Division, the Carolina Hurricanes. They finished 23rd overall in the NHL last year. Their additions this year, very busy offseason. Alex Semin, Jordan Staal, Joe Corvo, and Marc-Andre Gragnani. Their deletions from their roster, Brian Allen, and, of course, Brandon Sutter. The Carolina Hurricanes are sort of a sexy pick for a team to make a big leap this year. Do they have it in them?
I don't think so.
Tell me why.
I've studied them a bit. I don't think so. I think they're weak on the wings. And I think, first of all, Tuomas Ruotsi injury is going to hurt them. I think they're weak on the wings. And I think their defense is overrated. Joe Corvo is going to be playing the four role, it appears. Joe Corvo is not a top four defenseman. Joe Corvo is absolutely not a top four defenseman. He can't work along the boards. He's lazy at times. He can skate and move the puck, but he can't defend like a top four defenseman. Staal and Staal up the middle are great. Jussi Jokinen is good as a third line center. What are you going to get from Zach Boychuk? Can he perform the level he was in the AHL? What about Daup? Is Talusi what you think? I like LaRose, but questions. And then Semin, for a skilled player, you never know. Skinner, can he stay healthy? Staal and Staal, you know, going in there in a new system. I don't think this team is a playoff team. I mean, they're not an easy team to play against. They can skate. I mean, that defense, they can move. Picking in and Falk. Falk's a really nice young player. And I know Ezzy likes him. But I don't think this team is a playoff team. Cam Ward's great, but this is a team, I don't think this team's a playoff team.
This is probably one area where we disagree most. I have them winning the division.
So do I.
And it's going to be tough for them, I think, with Washington and Tampa Bay. But, you know, Richie mentioned Zach Boychuk. He's actually going to start on the top line. Mm-hmm. They're actually not going to have Eric Staal and Jordan Staal together.
Which I like.
According to our boy Chip Alexander, the Rally News Observer, it's actually going to be, you know, Zach Boychuk on the top line, and they're going to have Delp on the second line with Jordan Staal. But I think you start in goal with Cam Ward. He's, in my mind, a top five goaltender in the NHL. He's always good. Eric Staal, one of the best players in the NHL. And now you've added his brother up the middle. They're just excellent. I do think that Jiří Tolusti is a good player, and I think he's been one of those guys. He's still young. Everyone thinks he's been around because he was at the Leafs for so long. But I think that the Carolina Hurricanes, with the additions that they've made, Justin Falk, another season of play, is now their top defenseman. It's Joni Pikkanen. They've brought Joe Corvo back. They're well coached by Kirk Muller.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the reason why I differ in opinion with Richie is just because I think that certain players, forwards, will be adequate on the wings playing with the Staal brothers. So that's kind of my take. But the Carolina Hurricanes, I think, are a team that's on the up for sure.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we go through our Eastern Conference division winners and our playoff teams coming out of the East, and we make our Stanley Cup prediction for who's going to represent the Eastern Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's TSN 1290, Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. 10 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We've previewed the entire Eastern Conference. Now I want to put you guys on the record. I want your Eastern Conference division winners. I want your playoff teams. And I want your Eastern Conference champion. We'll start one team at a time. Ezzy, who wins the Southeast in your mind?
Richie, it's like Drew's like a sheriff and not just like the host of the show, even though, you know, Shane Knighty's the real sheriff, but it's almost like, you know, Drew's an interrogator. I'm going to put you guys under the on the record, under the light. I'm the judge and the jury.
I might be the executioner if you don't hurry up
exactly.
Also.
And I didn't shoot the sheriff, but I did shoot the deputy.
Go on.
I'm going to pick, even though...
Which division were we talking about?
Southeast.
I'm looking at it now, and you know, I made my prediction yesterday, and I think we're going to put it up on the site, if not today, later. Dave Manuk of LegalCurve.com. Shout out to him. Does a great job,
obviously.
Can you make
a pick or what?
Can you hurry up, please?
Have to give my shout outs to Dave M. I'm going to pick the Carolina Hurricanes to win the division, and obviously they didn't make the playoffs last year. The team that I have... And I know last year I picked the Jets to make the playoffs, but this year I'm not going to pick the Jets to make the playoffs.
Okay,
so I don't think
all I want right now is your Southeast.
Okay, I thought
division.
You wanted the order. No.
Okay. Richie, I
Carolina.
Want your Southeast. Team.
Carolina.
Tampa Bay
for Richie.
I thought you said Washington last segment.
I didn't say it. I thought about it, and then I decided.
I think you said it.
I never said it.
Let's get Remus to check that.
Did
last
I say
segment.
It, Remus? I don't think I said
last
it.
Last segment, you pick Washington to win the division.
I would.
But
all,
you're on the record.
I'm
now
all,
that now that, that Judge Drudy
Judge Drudy
is presiding.
I'm going to also take the Carolina Hurricanes, pardon me, to win the Southeast Division. Richard, I'll start with you, the Atlantic Division.
The Rangers.
Ezzy?
I'm going to take... Who did I write down there? Because I...
you wrote down the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay, so I'll take the Penguins then.
I will likewise take the Penguins, which really is troubling me that Ezzy and I have agreed on the first two division winners here. The Northeast Division. I'll go, Ezzy, you can start.
Boston.
Yeah. I think that is a clean sweep right across for all of us.
I'll
is
take
the
Boston
Bruins.
As well.
Yeah. We all took the Bruins to win the Northeast Division. Now I want your next five playoff teams.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. I mean, any five. Richie, just give me one more of your playoff teams.
I believe last year in the segment, Ezzy picked nine.
He did.
I thought maybe there was a wild card.
Okay. To round it out.
Just give me one more.
You want five more, you said?
Sorry, give me five more.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Philadelphia. Although I'm kind of sketching Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh.
I don't know why people are
oh, that's a little bit.
Top team.
Pittsburgh, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
So I need two more now?
You need three more now.
No,
you need two more now. Pardon me.
Do I need two or three? I think I need three more.
You need three, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go on a couple limbs because I feel like it's hard to predict sometimes exactly what happens with these, right? I'm going to take Montreal in a surprise pick.
Okay.
I'm going to take...
Hang on. You need one more, pardon me.
Okay. Montreal in a surprise pick.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone back and forth. I've actually gone back and forth on who... I'm going to take Washington as the other one.
That's it.
And
that's eight.
Yeah.
Or unless you're changing. Unless you're changing.
I might be changing Montreal. I've gone back and forth on this all week. I'll keep Montreal.
Richie, you better hurry up because the season starts in 5 hours. So.
I'm taking Montreal.
Okay, Ezzy, I need five playoff teams for you.
Okay, so obviously I have Boston,
so far
Carolina,
so far you have Boston, Pittsburgh, and Carolina.
Okay. So, starting with the Atlantic, because that is the best division.
Okay.
I've got three teams making. Philadelphia and Rangers, obviously. Rangers, I think, finished fourth or fifth.
Okay.
Not that far behind Pittsburgh. In the Southeast Division, I've got Carolina winning the division. Florida won't make the playoffs this year. I've got Tampa Bay and Washington.
You have Tampa Bay and Washington making the playoffs?
Yes.
Okay. You have one more team.
Buffalo.
Buffalo to make the playoffs. Okay, I'm going to do my picks now. I got five here. I have, obviously, Philly making it. I have the Rangers making it. I have Buffalo making it this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have I had Carolina winning the division, and I have Washington making it out of the Southeast as well. And the final team that I have making it out of there is the Tampa Bay Lightning. So here are the top eight for each of us. For Ezra Ginsberg, here are his playoff teams. The Carolina Hurricanes. The Pittsburgh Penguins, the Boston Bruins. They win the division. Then he's got the Philadelphia Flyers, the New York Rangers, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Washington Capitals, and the Buffalo Sabres. Richard has the Tampa Bay Lightning winning the Southeast, the Rangers winning the Atlantic, and the Bruins winning the Northeast. His other five playoff teams are the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Buffalo Sabres, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Washington Capitals. So the one spot that we really differ on this one is you have Montreal making it, while Ezzy and I both have Carolina making it.
I was deciding between Montreal and the Jets.
Really?
Yep.
Well, we'll talk about the Jets later on, because right now none of us have the Winnipeg Jets making the playoffs.
I reserve the right to make a final decision by the end of the show.
Fine. If you want to change it by the end of the show, we can do that.
Just quickly, I want to get in here. Richie, you mentioned the Jets, and I know we're saving it for later, Drew. And
yeah.
We will obviously cover the Jets later, but I think they've gotten better. I just think the whole conference has gotten better, and that with the travel. That's why I think the Jets will – they're a better team, and they're getting better, and we're going to get into this later, but I just don't see them making the playoffs in a short season with all these other teams that have gotten better.
And my eight playoff teams are the Hurricanes winning the Southeast, the Penguins winning the Atlantic, the Bruins winning the Northeast, and then I have Philly, the Rangers, Buffalo, Washington, and Tampa Bay to round off the top eight in the Eastern Conference. Very quickly, who represents the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup?
The Rangers.
It's tough to go against that pick with what they did last year, but I'm going to go with the Penguins to represent the East in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think a full year of Crosby, Malkin, what he's done. They've gotten better with the backup goaltender position with Thomas Vokoun. I think Fleury will be better, so I'm going to go with Pittsburgh.
I'm going to mimic your Pittsburgh pick and agree with you there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift our focus over to the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is our comprehensive NHL season preview. We're live on TSN 1290, Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big shout-out. Yeah. To Colin Jensen.
Yes.
He's the man. He brought us some coffee and a little bit of...
Timbits?
Some refreshments to keep us going throughout the rest of the next 2 hours and 40 minutes that we still have in store for you.
By the way, Drew, I think Richie's currently brushing his teeth right now with coffee. I don't know what's going on over here.
He's
mixing up a coffee.
He's stirring his coffee. Not sure why that's that exciting.
I need to brush my teeth. My breath is terrible.
Wow. Ezzy, what about the time that we went on a trip to Minneapolis and you forgot your toothbrush and took you 3 days to buy a new one?
Let's go with the Central Division preview.
Central Division.
Oh, boy.
Central Division preview, gentlemen. This used to be probably the most competitive division in the league. Probably been overtaken by the Atlantic Division at this point in time, but it still is a very solid division. We'll start with the St. Louis Blues. They were third overall in the NHL last year. The surprise of the NHL last season, pretty much the status quo as they were last year. Their additions were Wade Redden, who they signed earlier yesterday, and I believe Jeff Wojtka. Is that right? And they lost B.J. Crombien from the team, but their bigger additions are going to be the guys that come up from the from their farm system or their draft picks. I'm speaking mainly of Tarasenko, Vladimir Tarasenko. He's their 2010 first rounder that they have high hopes for. Do the St. Louis Blues? Do they stay up at the top of the NHL?
I think they do stay at the top of the NHL. Ken Hitchcock is such a respectable coach. He's such a smart guy. And you look at the St. Louis Blues and the run they went on last year. They had such a good defense. Brian Elliott, Yaroslav Halak. Is there a better 1A and 1A goaltending tandem in the NHL? Probably not. Maybe aside from the Vancouver Canucks. But I do think the St. Louis Blues remain a top team in the Western Conference, Drew. I look at their team, and TJ Oshie, as Richie knows, former UND boy, one of my favorite players to watch in the NHL, but David Perron wasn't healthy for the entire season last year. Such a good player. The way those guys play together, they have no superstars, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in that forward group that's a superstar, but Captain David Backes is such a good two-way player, future Selke material. You just look at the team top to bottom. Alex Pietrangelo, top five defenseman in the NHL, really emerged as a superstar last year. They're just so strong at every position. They don't have any superstars, but it's almost like the St. Louis Blues are the Boston Bruins of the Western Conference. Not quite as good offensively, but just such a solid group. And then Drew, you mentioned Tarasenko. He made the team. Mm-hmm. They have very high hopes for him. Was very good for SKA St. Petersburg of the Russian League. He's only 20 years old, but I mean, again, he's another guy that's going to add an offensive element to the team. So when you add all of that up, it's tough to pick them not to repeat. Maybe not as – I don't have them winning the Central Division. I have the Hawks winning the Central Division, but I think they're going to be a top four team in the West for sure.
I really like this team. You know, you look at their ability to defend, and Ken Hitchcock obviously is a factor in that, and their goals against last year first. Penalty killing, top 10.
Yep.
Can they improve offensively? I think they can, as you mentioned, the injury to Perron. The maturation of Pietrangelo. And you look at, you know, Shattenkirk, a nice puck-moving guy, and you mentioned Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz.
Alexander Steen was also missed half the season last year.
Yeah, also injured. And
Andy McDonald.
Yep.
Andy McDonald. And you have guys, you know, your third line might be Berglund, guys like Stewart, Schwartz, whatever it may be. All can play power play. That's third line. Depth, speed, size. I don't want to make my prediction yet, but I think this team wins the division. I'll say that much right now. And I think this team is focused. You know, Redden, I saw him play last year. I don't think many people have seen him play. I saw him play.
Him play in Bridgeport last year.
Yeah, nothing to write home about. And people have concern about his foot speed. I have concern about lots of things with him. But you know what? He can make a first pass. Can always skate, but...
And they're not relying on Wade Redden to play a significant role on the back end. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, if they can get something out of him, then it's really just a bonus, and I mean, it costs you next to nothing at $800,000.
Just quickly, Drew, the only change is really is on forward. Langenbrenner and Arnott were not brought back, and you throw in Tarasenko, and Alexander Steen's healthy. Jaden Schwartz is thrown in there, so they've built from within, and they're only going to get better. Again, regardless if they win in the division, they're a team that's the future looks very bright.
And Langenbrenner and Arnott were only there as one-year bridge. Exactly. To some of these other guys, and now that year is up, they've got...
Looks like their careers are over, which is unfortunate. Both really good New Jersey Devils back in the day.
And Jaden Schwartz is a guy we saw play last year. UND, as he and a real nice talent.
Yeah. Nashville Predators last year, they finished fifth overall in the NHL. We know about their losses this year. I mean, you can just start with, you know, Ryan Suter, and, I mean, they have other losses, Radulov, Kostitsyn, and all, but it begins and ends with Ryan Suter. How far is the drop for the Nashville Predators?
It's significant, Richie. They're still very well coached, and Pekka is an excellent goaltender year after year, you know, Vezina candidate. But Ryan Suter was a minute eater, such a good defenseman, and they wanted him, and there was a reason why they were devastated when they lost him. Ryan Suter is one of the top defensemen in the NHL. You've still got Shea Weber, who I think wins the Norris Trophy finally this year, but Andrei Kostitsyn's gone. You're asking for... Again, lots of production from Mike Fisher, David Legwand, Martin Irat, Patrick Hornquist, all guys that were good last year, but they weren't great. So I think you look at the Nashville Predators, they're still going to be excellent defensively. Roman Josi now becomes a top pairing defenseman with Shea Weber. And, you know, Hal Gill and Kevin Klein, both good defensemen. I just don't think they have enough firepower to make up for the loss of Ryan Suter. I actually think they're going to miss the playoffs this year.
Looking at their lines, your first lines, Fisher, Rat, and Kostitsyn, right? I think, sorry, they got two Kostitsyns. I mixed up the one.
Sergey.
Craig Smith, who played well, is a BC product, I believe. Legwand and Hornquist, Gostad and Hauschuk and Colin Wilson, he'll be a key, and your fourth line's not great. But your defense, I mean, you're obviously asking for Ryan Ellis to be able to provide some offense, some of which was left behind, obviously, with Suter leaving. Josi is, as you mentioned, with Weber. And then Pekka Rinne, and then you have Mason. You've lost the other Kostitsyn. You've lost Andre. You've lost Radulov. You lost Suter. You lost a lot of offense. But if you look at Nashville last year, Drew, the thing about them is, you know, you determine whether or not they can be a playoff team. That's really the question we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
I think St. Louis is going to win the division. And they were top 10 in every big category last year, except for faceoffs. So the question is, if they drop down...
Eighth in goals for, eighth in goals against, first overall in power play.
Top power play in the league.
10th in penalty killing.
Yep.
So, I mean, Suter obviously will have a factor on the power play and et cetera. But the truth of the matter is, guys, if they drop down to middle of the pack, they could still make the playoffs. So if you look at it from that perspective, Mm-hmm. From an overall roster perspective, I don't think the West is as good as it was last year.
No, I think it's the East is the dominant conference.
So I'll see my predictions for the prediction segment here. But Nashville is a team that it's almost, you know, it's been said before, once you bet against them, they ended up somehow making it.
So. Sure. It always seems to be every year we wait for them to drop off, and every year they manage to maintain the status quo.
They have Hannon Gildos, a little bit slower on the back end, though, mm-hmm. points.
Jonathan Blum and Ryan Ellis are going to be their bottom pairing defensemen.
I don't think Blum's playing the first game, I don't think.
They're top to bottom, they just haven't gotten better.
The Detroit Red Wings and the Chicago Blackhawks tied for 10th overall in the NHL last year. We know about, the Blackhawks pretty much stayed status quo from this team they had last year. The Red Wings had some turnovers, specifically Nicholas Lidstrom retiring, Brad Stewart going over to back to San Jose. Jiří Hudler went to Calgary. Their additions were, not great. Jonas Gustafsson as a backup, a couple of the Samuelsons. Which team, the Blackhawks or the Red Wings, is better this year?
I think the Blackhawks are better this year. I'm very high on the Blackhawks this year. Spoiler alert, but I think they will win the division, even though Richie picks the Blues, and I think there's a really good chance they win the division. But you know what? I'm going to stick to my guns and pick the Blackhawks. 3 years removed from a Stanley Cup, and everyone has seems to have forgotten about them. But you know what happened? Well, Patrick Kane had a bad year. Jonathan Taves had a concussion, and then he came back in the playoffs, and then they didn't get good goaltending, so they got knocked out in the first round. But you've still got such good talent in the top six forward position. Marian Hossa, Patrick Sharp. It's unbelievable. The top line is going to be, Daniel, it looks like they're going to put Daniel Carcillo with Taves on the top line there to add some toughness, make sure Taves doesn't get pushed around. I just think that, they're so far from, so not far, pardon me, from being back to an elite team. And I think the injuries last year, and Jarmolson didn't have a good year, but I think Johnny Oduya was good in the playoffs last year. I like Nick Leddy to take another step. It's all goaltending, and I think that eventually at some point, again Richie, they went after Brodeur. We know they wanted Brodeur, so I still think I'll say this, and I know it's interconference. Roberto Luongo makes the best sense for me, or a trade for somebody makes sense, because I think the Hawks are a number one goaltender away from getting back to being a Stanley Cup winner.
I think the Hawks are...
You can talk Hawks and Red Wings in this right now.
I think the Hawks are an aimless team.
An aimless team?
Yeah. What's Dan Bowman done to this team since he took over that's been that productive?
He hasn't made a ton of changes, but how many changes did he need to make given roster he inherited?
He's got to make a position. Richie, he's got to make a change at goaltender. I mean, Corey Crawford was awful last year, so and he tried to get Brodeur, and he hasn't addressed that. So I agree with you. I don't think he's made that many changes, but when you've got all of these superstars on forward, the real changes that you have to make are on defense and in goal, and he hasn't done that. I agree with you on that one.
It's a hodgepodge of talent. I mean, you have Taves, Kane, Hossa, Boland, all those guys. And I love David Boland. But how do you fill out the... I know Brandon Saad is going to make the team. How do you fill out the bottom of the roster? Are the guys going to be playing roles that they're fitted to play? That's the question. And what about your goaltending? I think Quenneville's the first coach to be fired this year.
Really?
Yeah.
We know that they don't get along.
What about the Red Wings?
The Red Wings, I think people are underrating. People want to throw in the towel on Detroit.
One.
People want to throw in the towel.
I think they'll still make the playoffs.
I mean, I realized they lost Lidstrom, and he wasn't a defenseman he used to be last year, but he was still good. They lost Lidstrom, and I never really liked Jimmy Howard. But Cromwell can play. White, those guys can move the puck. Erickson's taken some steps forward. Remember, he was a forward for many years before he became a defenseman. Their 1-12 forward lines control the puck. They're playing Datsyuk with Zetterberg this year. That's a dominant line. Can Phil Pula play with Franz and those guys? Can they stay healthy as an older team? I still think Detroit makes the playoffs. I know some think they don't. I think Detroit makes the playoffs. I think the Blackhawks miss the playoffs.
Remember that for when we do our actual playoff previews. The last team in the division is the weak sister of the division. That's the Columbus Blue Jackets. We know that they are not going to make the playoffs this year, but the future does look brighter for the first time in many years in Columbus.
I don't even know about that. I think the future is bright in the sense that they're strong on defense.
Well, that's
I still think
it's a start.
Yeah, it's a start, Drew. I know where you're going with that. The Columbus Blue Jackets won't make the playoffs this year. If you look at pick up any magazine or watch any television show, everyone's going to pick them last. And I don't know if they'll be necessarily last, but they'll be close to last if they're not last. But again, it's a transition year. Not having Ryan Murray, he's a guy that could have stepped into the NHL. But you know, it's the post Rick Nash era in that division. I just don't think they have enough firepower on a nightly basis. And Brandon Dubinsky and Artem Anisimov they go from the Rangers, Richie, it was tough for them to be top six forwards. Mm-hmm. Now they go to Columbus, and now they are top six forwards. I think that they're just too weak offensively. But on defense, there's a lot to be excited about. Ryan Murray, when he's healthy, comes back. Jack Johnson, James Wisniewski, even though the contract was terrible. But I can't go against the grain. I think they'll be one of the bottom teams.
In the future, I think they have some pieces there that are on the way up. So, Drew, I do agree that in the future, and I think that Rick Nash on a team that's not very good anyways isn't really that big of an asset because he's not that good. The team's not that good. I think they're going to be harder to beat this year. I think guys like Dubinsky and have a bounce back year, and Anisimov's going to be better with more room and more time. And they got a bunch of players that are kind of the same, you know, Foligno's and Umbergers and all those kind of guys, you know, to me, tweeners in terms of their roles. But overall, I think they're better than last year. Not that it's hard to be, it's hard to be any worse. I think Bobrovsky's a nice addition to push Steve Mason. I think Columbus is not going to make the playoffs by any means, but I think they're going to surprise some teams and catch them off guard, and I think they finally are making some progress, and I think John Davidson's going to be a big reason for that.
When we come back, we are going to preview the Northwest Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're going division by division, team by team, and we continue doing so.
Northwest Division.
The Northwest Division, probably the worst division in hockey last year. The most top-heavy division, that's certainly the case with the Vancouver Canucks, who finished first overall in the NHL. They won the President's Trophy.
I thought they missed the playoffs.
No, that was my prediction last year.
That'll be the last time I give you the gears on that one, Drew.
I don't think it will be, I got to be honest. I think I'll be hearing that for a little while longer. The Vancouver Canucks, well, let me ask you this question. Looking at the Vancouver Canucks roster, is there any way that they can replicate being the first overall team in the NHL this season?
It's going to be tough, Richie. Okay. The Vancouver Canucks, and a lot has been talked about this, you know, in the last 2 weeks, but you've got Andrew Ebbett starting as your second line center, and he's going to play with Zach Cassian and Mason Raymond, okay?
What is this? This is the Chicago Wolves lineup?
The injury to Ryan Kesler is a huge concern to everyone. And it's because they don't know when he's coming back. And if Ryan Kesler doesn't come back till, let's say, late February, early March, you almost wonder, are the Canucks going to even make the playoffs? It's a legitimate question. I still think they'll make the playoffs. But it's a legitimate question. And the problem is Zach Cassian, I really like him. He's a grinder and he played on, you know, a good junior player, but he's not a second line right winger. I mean, he's a grinder. And
Not yet.
He's 21 years old and he's not yet. And you look at the team, and again, it starts with the top line, great top line, Daniel Sedin, Henrik Sedin. Those guys will do what they always do. Mm-hmm. Great power play guys, some of the most skilled guys in the NHL. But the second line is such a huge drop off. Not only is Kesler not there, but you don't have David Booth there, who was a big acquisition for them, and he struggled last year. But, you know, they signed Alex Edler to a 6-year contract yesterday, Drew, and they're still good defensively. You've got, you know, Kevin Bieksa and all that. Goaltending Corey Schneider, one of the top goaltenders in the league, but their elite status, I think, is in question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really concerns me that, you know, these guys are injured, and they really haven't done that much to improve. Jordan Schrader, again, I think he's a good prospect at this point, but that's just what he is. He's a prospect who is a few years away from being an everyday NHLer. I think the Canucks take a step back this year.
The only addition the Canucks really made is adding Jason Garrison via free agency from the Florida Panthers last year. You know, Richie, you look at this Canucks forward group. I mean, we know they're without Ryan Kesler. They're without David Booth for probably the first month of the season. He a groin injury or a hamstring injury and suffered in training camp.
Was it killed while he's killing bears?
I think he might have been. Yeah, while he killed a bear, he tried to lift with his back as opposed to his legs, and he injured himself.
Mandelbaum.
Yeah. You know, where do you see the Canucks ending, or how do you see the Canucks season going?
You know, I've gone back and forth on this, Drew, because you look at their offense, and there's some serious question marks after the first line. But then you look at their defense, and Hamhuis, and Garrison, and Edler, and Bieksa. It's a pretty darn good top four. And then yep. You got Schneider and Luongo, or whatever they get for Luongo. And if you can play a defensive style and base it around those four guys and then the top line of Sedin and then kind of just try and split the game the rest of the way, meaning just try not to give up any goals, you could be a very successful team. So the question is, do they change the style of play? I mean, I know Mike Gillison was written about in the Globe Mail. I know the Ezzy has the article up about how the scientific this, scientific that. Well, scientifically, what's your talent level? That's what I want to know. And Mike Gillis, I mean, has had struggles in terms of his moves. I mean, a lot of his moves haven't worked out.
Yep.
And the Luongo one's going to be very important for him, which is why he's holding out for some.
That's make or break, Richie.
Yeah, I think so. And have they reached a point where they're close? I don't think the window's closed on them.
No. Nope.
Because Kessler's coming back, and then you look at the team, and it's looking darn good. But whenever Kessler does come back. But the window is closing. And so we don't know, but it's highly dependent, on whether or not Alain Vigneault adjusts his style of play.
If the Canucks start slowly, is Alain Vigneault in any trouble?
I don't think so.
He got a contract extension, but this is the thing. This
Ron Wilson proved that's all how much
exactly.
That's worth.
Yeah, what does that mean? You can easily just get rid of him. But
we're $2 million.
Yeah. Drew, the biggest thing right now is you've got Roberto Luongo as such a tradable asset, and now
or not?
Well, and now you really need a top six forward, and people know that they are more desperate to trade Roberto Luongo than a team is to acquire him. So I look at the team now, and I have major concerns just with those forwards. And this is, our boy Jason Botchford and Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province have been writing about this all week. I mean, either way you look at it, I mean, these guys just aren't second-line forwards. And it's not that they're just not second-line forwards, Drew. It's because you've had such a good second line in Vancouver for so long.
But it wasn't last year, is it?
No, it wasn't. It struggled because Ryan Kesler had the injuries. But when the Vancouver Canucks went to the finals against the Bruins, you had the amazing first line and the amazing second line. So that's why there's so much concern. Because, again, the Vancouver Canucks aren't happy with making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the Calgary Flames finished 17th in the NHL last year. They were the second best team in the Northwest Division. Is this the same, Calgary Canucks or Calgary Flames? Pardon me, that we've seen for the last number of years, where they're fighting tooth and nail just to get into the eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference, and then they fall short.
Go back and forth on this one too. I mean, the seasons are interesting. I like Bob Hartley hire.
Okay,
I think it's a good hire. Yep. I think he's innovative. I think he's going to be a good coach.
Yep.
I don't mind the moves that they made. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like the contracts they give out. But the talent-wise, which is what we're analyzing on a day-to-day basis here,
it's
Hudler and Weidman and Cervenka. Well, Cervenka irons out his clawed issues.
Cervenka's a little bit, he's injured.
I don't think he'll play today.
No,
he won't play today.
He's injured, and he's got some blood clots in his legs that he needs to resolve.
Yep. You have Sven Barchi, who's obviously, if he can stick, he can be a nice offensive addition there. But they're going to coach offense for the first time, I think, in a while. The issue I have with the Flames is simply this. When we talked about the strength of an organization and the strength of successful franchises earlier on in the show, we looked at the center position. And you look at Calgary last year, 30th overall in faceoffs. And I think that's an indicator, guys, of people playing out of position, like a Tanguay and things like that, because they're taking, or Camilleri, they're taking faceoffs. They're doing things that wingers generally don't do, obviously.
Yep.
So they're going to improve their goals for. Last year they were 24th. I think the style of play and the talent level, I think, will improve their goals for. Can they improve their goals for without losing something on the defensive end? And can they win in any level, really, consistently without having a strong center core? And you know, I say that taking into account the fact that maybe Michael Backlund shocks us. Maybe Cervenka comes back and plays really well. But there's a lot of question marks there. And while I think they're certainly going to compete for a playoff spot, it seems like we're probably back to the similar situation as it was in years past.
Yes. And, you know, Dennis Wiedemann improves, their production on the power play on the back end. And, you know, Jay Bomeister and Mark Giordano are good defensive defensemen, but who can also contribute offensively. The strength, again, is in goal with Kipper. We know that Kipper likes to play a lot, and people are saying that, you know, he might play 42 out of 48 games. He's the type of goalie that wants to play a lot. Leland Irving made the team over Carlson.
They waived both.
Yeah, they waived both. I'm trying to figure out who's
they
the
backup
both, goalie.
But they picked Leland Irving as the backup, yeah. But he won't play that much because Kiprasov likes to play a lot, and just like Brodeur. And, you know, he's good and he deserves it, but, you know, it looks like they're right now, because Cervenka's not playing, it looks like they're going to play Berchi with Backlund in the middle and then Camilleri on the right wing and move him away from the center position. But you're right, Richie. I don't think that they're good enough. Their secondary scoring is good enough. Aginla and Camilleri and Tange, you know, those are elite players, and you know, they'll get it done again offensively, but the secondary scoring isn't there, and I think, again, they're going to be in that 9th or 10th position.
The Colorado Avalanche finished 20th in the NHL last year. They were 3rd overall in the Northwest Division. Their additions this year were John Mitchell. P.A. Parenteau was their big one, and Greg Zanin on the back end. They lost Peter Mueller and Jay McClement. Colorado still not quite at a playoff team level, but on the way up.
Still haven't signed Ryan O'Reilly either.
Right.
And Adrian Dater wrote about that, Richie. And they're saying he's asking for Evander Kane money. He's asking for $5 million. After he had 2 years where, you know, he had 25 points, and then he had his 55-whatever-point season last year, and he's asking for too much money. He led the team in scoring. But even without him, that aside, I think the Colorado Avalanche are a team, you know, that has tons of skill. Everyone forgot about Paul Stastny and Matt Duchene, it seems like, because they've had bad years, but I think Colorado will be better this year, and you know, they added Parenteau. That'll add, obviously, scoring on the wing. I think it'll be tough for them to make the playoffs, but again, there's tons of young offensive talent there. I think for me, it's really, I don't know if it's all going to come together on a nightly basis in the shortened season, but I think they'll be close. They'll be better than last year, but I still think they're a little bit out of a playoff spot.
Rich, quickly, anything on Colorado?
Yeah, Drew, I do think Parenteau will help. I thought they overpaid for him, but I think he will help. Zanin's a nice stay-at-home guy. I've liked him, you know, fairly cheap. John Mitchell had speed up the middle. Their season will hinge on whether or not a guy like Matt Duchene can finally take the next step and stop talking about how good he is talent-wise and actually take the next step. I have questions about their goaltending, though, and I think that goaltending holds them back.
Minnesota Wild were the offseason winners in acquiring Zach Parise and Ryan Suter for, you know, just under $250 million when it was all in with all their contract length and everything. Is it enough to propel them from the 24th place in the NHL to top 16 and a playoff spot?
Well, is it enough with combined with a young talent like Michael Granlund?
That's right. They have a ton of talent coming up from through their farm system.
And so you look at their talent, their problem last year, and it stands out at you at the prep sheet we created here. What were they in goals against?
In goals against?
30. Bottom.
They were 30.
Bottom
in goals. No, goals four.
So that's what I meant. Goals,
goals
four.
Yeah. They were
30th.
Last in goals scored.
So look at it that way.
Well, Parise will help, and so will Granlund.
Yeah.
And will Suter.
Yeah, Suter certainly will as well.
If you can get a combination of, say, 15 or 20 from Granlund, 35 from Parise, and another 10, you're looking at
prorated, of course.
Yeah, 60 goals, 30 goals over a season. And maybe the guys you've lost, like Christensen, Lattendress, and Lundin, is probably nothing. Obviously, there's players that they are replacing, but you're adding that. So you go to be a more respectable team offensively. Your power play improves. It was 27th last year. I don't see how your penalty killing really loses much. Your goals against, I mean, with Suter, you would hope would get better. And you were pretty good in the face-off circle. I definitely see improvement for the Wild. The question is, how much improvement?
Richie, I think, sorry to cut you off there. You look at the Minnesota Wild, and when you add Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, superstars, you're obviously going to get better. And the Wild, if you remember, were a very good team in October and November and then started to slide in December.
Best team in the NHL
They were the best team in the
months.
NHL. I think they started to slide when they came into Winnipeg. And I believe Winnipeg, if I remember correctly, Winnipeg defeated them.
That's right.
And they started to slide there. But I think the best thing about Parise coming is that he takes offensive pressure off of Koivu and Heatley, to be honest with you. For me, I think that they're a bottom playoff team, if not a just outside of the playoffs, like with a Calgary. But I think when you add those two guys in the primes of their career, I mean, it's tough to not pick them to have a drastic improvement.
And the one question you need to ask is their back end? You need to pose that question.
Right.
Is it good enough?
Even with Suter.
Yep.
Final team in the Northwest, the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, yeah, if I ask this question 2 years from now, I think most Oilers fans would expect the question, are the Oilers the best team in the NHL? This year, mm-hmm. are they precocious enough and youthful enough to get into the playoffs?
Drew, I think they are. And I know people are saying, oh, but what about defensively and what about Dubnyk? And I know Dubnyk played well at the end of last year, and I don't necessarily read too much into that because they were out of it. But he's a big guy, and he's got some potential. I know Habib Bulin's injured. They're back in. You got Whitney in a contract year. You got the apparently amazing Justin Schultz. I'm excited to see him finally play. You have a guy like Ladislav Smead and Nick Schultz. Smead is a really underrated defensive defenseman.
The Schultz two Schultzes.
Schultz will be solid. And then you look at their offense, and their three lines are really good. And they have speed, and they're going to be young, and they're going to be a lot of energy in a shortened season, and I don't really see these guys necessarily wearing down. I mean, Schultz could because he played in college, and he's already played about 40 games. But I see this team being able to threaten to win this division. Never mind make the playoffs.
Richie, the thing is, their top six defensemen, aren't necessarily the best in the NHL. But when you look at all of the young guys that they've had, it's a laundry list of young first overall picks with Eberle and Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov. They're going to have the puck so much. They're going to score so many goals. They're going to be an offensive team. And you know what? Ralph Kruger, who has the history in Europe, in Switzerland, everybody's talking about his attention to detail and how he has these guys prepared and how he's a good guy to work with these young players. And I think Devan Dubnyk will be fine. I think because they have so much offensive talent, they'll make the playoffs. And again, I agree with you on that one. I don't think it's time to order the Stanley Cup rings yet, Drew. But 2 or 3 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised if they're hoisting the Stanley Cup. There's just so many first overall picks on that team that are just so talented.
Might be sooner. I just you look at the other teams like Chicago, those teams. Some of those teams peak really early in those guys' progression. Mm-hmm. You're looking at Taylor Hall's third year, yep. Eugene Hopkins second. I mean, who's to say he can't score 40? Hall, who's to say
they could upset a few teams this year in the playoffs? Why not?
They could upset a few. Yeah, I agree.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final division is the Pacific Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is our comprehensive season preview. We're live on TSN 1290.